There's a new report out that Bill Clinton collected $50,000 per month from MF Global, while Newt Gingrich got millions from, what was it, Freddie Mac. This later report from How Dare You, Department of Clinton Criminal Enterprises, and it just goes through all the reported things he's done as an advisor through Joe S. Corzine, the former New Jersey governor, former head of Goldman Sachs, who admittedly made 40-to-1 bets customers' private accounts. Continuing, the real reason for Obama's threat to veto indefinite detention bill, Obama wants to veto indefinite detention bill because it would hold the U.S. to the Geneva Convention, and it would give Congress the power, which it rightfully does, to make law. Obama's already told him, I'll kill citizens, I'll arrest citizens. The executive holds that, and his lawyers came out last week and said he may veto the National Defense Authorization Act because he can use the military in America if he wants. He can do whatever he wants. So that's the facts there, and that's now coming out weeks after we told you what was really going on. There's also not a happy ending to Obama's little Hollywood romance. He can't make up his mind about anything, said Mr. Lear. He just vacillates like Democrats do generally. On taxes, he doesn't take a strong stand. He can't make up his mind about immigration. I don't even know if he's come clean on waterboarding or torture, any of those things. And that's prominent Hollywood people are mad at him because he hasn't taxed the rich enough. What do you mean he's financed by the mega elite? And at the same time, because he's continued all the torture and the rest of it. So that love affair is ending with Obama, who's a nothing teleprompter reading puppet. Continuing here, British Petroleum accuses Halliburton, same folks running Kellogg, Brown & Root, of destroying evidence following Gulf spill. BP has accused Halliburton of destroying damaging evidence about the quality of its cement. That came out day one. That went into drilling the well that blew out last year and caused the worst offshore oil spill in U.S. history. So the rats are turning on each other. Now getting into the incredible Panopticon surveillance grid. RT interviewed the inventor of the free software movement and legendary programmer and code person. Facebook is massive surveillance, says Stallman. Richard Stallman. This is an example of malicious features in non-free software. These mobile phones are being run by non-free software, so it's no surprise that they have malicious features in them. The most commonly used non-free programs do, Stallman sadly pointed out. Yeah, you think an application is one thing, but you're really paying to be surveilled, and the phone companies and others are making more money off selling your data than they are on the phone program. And they're tracking everything you do. They're always finding back doors and Trojan horses in them that began with the Telecommunications Act of 96 and have expanded on since then. So that's basically what, well, was the head of Facebook called his customers dumb effers that you trust him. I mean, these are just arrogant dirtbags, folks. These are slime bags. They've been chosen to be promoted by the system because they are sociopaths at best, some of them psychopaths. All right, now some spectacular news and information and great graphics put together by our own Darren McBreen. But now we look into the limitless universe with the trillions of galaxies and quadrillions of stars and planets to new discoveries by NASA. NASA telescope confirms alien planet inhabitable zone, the potentially habitable alien world orbits a star very much like our own sun. The discovery brings scientists one step closer to finding a planet like our own, one which could conceivably harbor life, scientists said. It goes on, the newfound planet is in the habitable zone called Kelper-22b. It's located about 600 light years away, orbiting a sun-like star. Amazing information. What humanity could do if we just stop the psychopaths from taking control of our society and stop being gullible. Shifting to another sector of the universe, astronomers have discovered the biggest black holes ever. Scientists have discovered two of the biggest black holes ever observed. Each has a mass a billions of times greater than the sun, according to a study. Just to give you an idea of how massive these are, they could swallow up entire galaxy clusters. What a gorgeous and limitless cosmos we are a part of, and our consciousness and being alive and able to observe this is an incredible gift from the Creator. And if you don't think something made all this, ladies and gentlemen, my God, can you imagine our consciousness and our intellect? And we are tiny little creatures living in a thin ribbon of life on the surface of a globe.
You are listening to an InfoWars.com frontline report. If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to an extremely important edition of InfoWars Nightly News. It is Tuesday, December 6th, 2011. And this is going to be a huge show tonight with so many incredibly important topics covered. And normally I would mention some of what's coming up, but the news we've got tonight is so incredibly devastating to our republic and is breaking as we speak that I'm going to cover our top story, obviously, first here before getting into any of the other news. I'm holding here in my hand a document that just went up minutes ago at InfoWars.com and PrisonPlanet.com. And we've called the numbers involved. We've checked the individuals listed in this document and the accompanying emails. And it is authentic. Kellogg, Brown, and Root, a subsidiary of Halliburton. The story is at InfoWars.com and is breaking at InfoWars.com right now. The headline by Kurt Nemo at InfoWars.com is exclusive government activating FEMA camps across the United States. Now, in 2006, it was in the Houston Chronicle and Wall Street Journal that they got a $300+ million contract to build 3 1-million person camps for political dissidents, illegal immigrants, you name it, for economic collapse. They've introduced legislation to fund more of this and to bring it out in the open. The Emergency Centers Establishment Act last year that got so much attention that says that they will intern entire families in these facilities. It also came out earlier in the year that the Army and other private groups are trying to hire around 100,000 internment specialists. And when you read, it's domestic and international prison guards. And, of course, our so-called government has camps all over the world. Kellogg, Brown, and Root has been caught with its main company, Halliburton, running slave labor camps in the Philippines and other areas. That's in the Chicago Tribune. You cannot make this magnitude of information up. It is the mainstream media's job and other people, Comedy Central and others that make fun of us, they did last night, to actually go research this. This is not a joke, and you'll be seen in history, whether we defeat this or it goes through, as sympathizers basically with the likes of Hitler, Stalin, and Mao. This is not a joke. This is not a game. And the detailed article that Kurt Nemo and I put together today goes through all of this information. We were sent this by a state employee involved in the program. I'm just going to leave it at that. And it was basically a hidden link on the KBR site. We were able to confirm it is there on the KBR site, a non-published link. And that is in our article where we got the link from and everything else. Just unbelievable information here. And it says that they need people to set up barbed wire fences and barricades. And I've been to urban warfare drills across the country where the Marines and the Army practice taking on the American people and do set up the barricades in the towns and the cities and around the camps. Now, again, I want to explain. These camps are already built. They admit they're the old military bases. Now they are preparing in all 50 states to activate the camps with laundry, guards, people cooking the food, sentries. And we've got all the video and photos they've released on the NORTHCOM website where the Army and Marines and Air Force, security forces, you name it, are all training to arrest American citizens. In the training manuals that law enforcement have sent us that have been national news, say it's returning veterans, gun owners, libertarians, Ron Paul supporters, Bob Barr supporters, anybody who basically understands what freedom is. This is like in a science fiction movie when the evil corporation takes over the government and orders the good guys arrested. I mean, but of course, those movies are all based on real things that have happened in history. So truth is stranger than fiction. Fiction actually imitates life. The more I learned that I always thought that that life was imitating art. It's the other way around. Art is imitating life. And this is so incredible. This article goes over it all. And you know, it should not be up to a small independent media operation to be breaking all of this. The mainline corporate prostitute should be doing it. But later we've got a sociologist joining us who's broken down the actuaries that actually when the mainstream media endorses something, people run from it like the plague. We've got new news on the Ron Paul front with a sociologist and statistician joining us in studio. Again, jam-packed transmission. But exclusive government activating FEMA camps across the U.S. They're already built. They now admit they're there. Now they're going out and saying in all 50 states, they're going to have 300-person staging camps, 1,000-person staging camps. And again, you can go to Infowars.com and get the full report with the documents, the emails, all of it. Exclusive government activating FEMA camps across the United States. Just a devastating, devastating investigative report up there right now. I don't even feel worthy to be bringing you this information. I hope it's not pearls before swine. And we have the KBR instrumental in establishing the camps that are now to be activated in 2006. The internment camp service bid arrives after the National Defense Authorization Act. And we have links in here where the government says it's terrorism to protest. And those documents have been leaked by good people in the government. I mean, this is so creepy and it's so ridiculous. Obviously, protesting is not terrorism. Terrorists would say that. And of course, the state is always the greatest progenitor and deliverer and pusher of terror. As the founder said, it's the state you got to worry about. Little people can do horrible things, but not on a mass scale. Governments bring you the atrocities we saw, 200 plus million killed by governments in the 20th century. And there's the original Wall Street Journal, KBR awarded Homeland Security contract worth up to $385 million. That was in 2006 to build some of these large camps. Now this is an activation bid in all 50 states. And FEMA has 10 regions, but KBR, you know, the corporations, they like to simplify things. They've broken it down into five regions. So I don't know what you say about this. All of this is vetted. All of this is researched. And I remember Glenn Beck 2 years ago saying, I'm going to expose the FEMA camps. They're real. And then after a month of hype, he comes out and says it's all a fraud and uses known discredited hoaxes on the internet of railway stations and things. When the civilian inmate labor camp program has been declassified, the military with private prisoners in them to prime the pump and train the troops to be jail guards. The emergency centers establishment garbage, Rex 84, the congressional hearings in 86. I sent all this to Glenn Beck, and I happen to know he got it. And I happened to predict. I waited till the day before so people understood that it wasn't me predicting it, and then he just decided to do what I'd predicted, that he would go show fake straw men. Okay? And he did just that. And I'm not here to attack Glenn Beck, okay? You know, he's done some good work, and that's why he got too real, and they got rid of him. The point is that we don't have time for people to be in denial anymore. We don't have time to play games. I've given you the legislation, which didn't pass, but is the entire blueprint for what's already built. Kind of like they've been spying on us for decades, and then when they got caught, they brought out legislation to legalize it. Or they get caught torturing, they then try to pass laws to make it legal. Okay, that's what's going on here. And it's pointed at the American people. This, I told you they'd have TSA on the streets running checkpoints. Now it's begun all over the country. I do my research. We do our research. And I'm getting chills right now for my family. I've decided to try to defend the Republic. And the globalists are in a lot of trouble. They've been exposed for their corruption, their drug dealing. It came out in the New York Times 2 days ago that the government is laundering drug money. The government itself, and not just running guns into Mexico. That's been in federal court for years. Again, these are criminals at the top, and it's time for people in the mid-level of government to say no to it. You know, Nixon gave orders that were illegal at the end, and people said, you know what, I'm not following your order to fire people that are investigating you. Just because you're the president doesn't make you king. This isn't the Third Reich. And it comes down to fundamental things. And we've really headed them off at the pass here. We have, from the beginning, exposed these dastardly characters. And so they don't know how to deal with it.
I have sworn upon the altar of God eternal hostility against every form of tyranny over the mind of man. Thomas Jefferson. It's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
Okay, I'm going to boil this down real simply and then read these articles and give you even more backstory to give you full spectrum analysis and breakdown on what we're facing. Criminal corporate financial oligarchs made major inroads by financing J.P. Morgan, the Rockefellers, and others in the 1860s and forward. The robber barons then controlled the Western expansion. They set up monopolies, and ever since then put out public reports that we've covered and posted and had historians on about, breaking down the fact that they wanted to overthrow our Republican form of government, our constitutional republic. This is historical fact. They didn't even try to hide it. They financed eugenics, which meant survival of the fittest. They believed it was their right to rule, dominate, kill whoever they want. If they can do it, that gives them the right. Might makes right. They already believed they were gods. They were financed by the Rothschilds and the British royalty and Dutch royalty. That's the main power centers of the Western system. The Vatican plays into that to a certain extent, especially more in modern times. But that main power structure and that system of governance came out of England. The concentration camp was invented on the Native Americans, picked up by the British after that. Now, they have gone for global financial domination by building giant bubbles of currency and derivatives garbage that is backed up by the U.S. military and U.S. taxpayers. They got the whole world to buy into it. And now they're saying, go along with what we say or we'll totally implode the world economy overnight. They've said it publicly in every country, the U.S. in 2008, right through Iceland, right through Greenland, right through Ireland, right through Greece, now into Spain, into Portugal. Portugal's raiding private pension funds. They're now taking private pension funds, bringing them into government control, and taking a large portion of it and calling it government protection of the funds. That's in Der Spiegel and Associated Press last night. And it's the same banks. When you hear about European banks, that's U.S. banks. That's globalist banks. That's the six big mega banks that we're dealing with. Now, they've committed this takeover. On the way up, when the bubble was expanding, they bought up the planet, paid people off. Now they're holding the planet hostage, saying, give us unlimited trillions. They call them bailouts. The media then turns it around and acts like the public owes this money. But they're really not even bailouts. It's lies within lies. It is direct global taxes to the six megabanks through their international consortiums of the IMF and World Bank and the U.S. arm, the Federal Reserve. The World Bank is more of the U.S. arm internationally of the Federal Reserve, but it's all interconnected. The IMF is mainly European and international as you go to the east. This is all Trilateral Commission breakdown information. It's all public. The stuff they think you're stupid, they think you don't care, they hide it in plain view for anybody that cares. Their architecture, their battle plans are all there because they think so little of you. Because they know you're designed to face a foreign enemy who wears a uniform and comes at you with a rifle and a bayonet, not someone that comes at you in business suits. Okay, so we're continuing with economic hitmen before I get into this huge FEMA camp news. You have to understand why it's happening. They are now admitting that the private banks have dominated Europe through fraud. Our media, bought and paid for by them, hails it as cutesy. They sit there and giggle about it on Bloomberg TV and radio. They giggle about it on CNBC. Oh, how it's undemocratic. How Europe won't never be able to vote its way out of this now. Getting rid of all of their sovereignty. How the euro was only the receivership arm, now they're going to implode that scaffolding and bring it fully under banker control with value-added taxes, sales taxes, carbon taxes, family taxes, total social control, shutting off economies for social engineering. They want you dependent, period. Global plantation. Now, patriots discovered this in the 1950s and 60s, namely Joseph McCarthy, who was demonized and who did have problems like anybody, and who did, they allowed him to persecute innocent people because that created a new form of censorship in the name of countering communism, which actually brought us into authoritarianism in the name of fighting another authoritarianism. It was a Hegelian dialectic of problem, reaction, solution. But the minute he discovered, I'm getting chills right now, this has even been in the New York Times and Moscow Times now, the minute he discovered that the Pentagon was funding the Russians and that the Pentagon and Arm & Hammer and the Rothschilds and Rockefellers were running it all so that Russia had a pretext to clamp down and so we had a pretext to be clamped down on, but that it was all a huge Hegelian dialectic of full-spectrum dominance, the minute he said that, they destroyed him. In the hearings, they said, you're saying the army's doing this. Now, in hindsight, they've declassified the GRU and KGB files 5 years ago. International headlines, McCarthy was right. It was all true. But again, it's cutesy. It's all very cutesy. But because of people warning the population and understanding it, and understanding that mega-rich want socialism and communism and collectivism and communitarianism and Agenda 21 for the general public to make us dependent on them, they sit international and are exempt from that and are exempt from taxes, as you see. Then they lobby for more taxes, telling the poor you'll get wealth redistribution with all this conspicuous consumption that they see and are licking their lips for if you get rid of the middle class, who the poor believe is rich. They're actually the only group still employing the poor, still buying things from them. That service economy must be eradicated, and it is. This is a philosophy of total degradation. Now I will give you the top news. My point is the globalists have been very arrogant and very out in the open in their white papers about vaccines that sterilize fluoride in the water to increase cancer, lower fertility, dumb everybody down. They have all been very honest about this because they have total contempt for you. Total contempt that you're not going to go read that because it's not, you know, the latest sitcom or drama or woman show or men's soap opera. You know, they're, you know, basically football. They think that you deserve it, and so they just hide it in plain view. But because the globalists know that when they bring in this total collapse, people are going to get angry. There's going to be a move to restore the republic. There's going to be a move to unroot them that have engineered this publicly, that they have built FEMA camps. They have continuity of government programs. They have mass arrest programs. They've tried to train the military and police to go along with this. They federalized things. They've put in the surveillance grid. And they've got different ways they can roll it out. A staged bio attack, a staged chemical attack, other terror attacks, mass shootings blamed on domestic groups. They've got a whole constellation of systems they can use to psyop people into going along with this. Because they've committed these crimes, they've committed this economic espionage, this economic invasion, this economic program of globalization, deindustrialization, and all of it, so they can consolidate all power and leave no enemy standing. They see anybody with a business, anybody independent, as the enemy. It's a scorched earth policy of kill the buffalo, let the red man starve. It's a scorched earth policy. Research what that is.
He's the T-Rex of political talk. Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
Before Zion, please begin your testimony when you are ready.
Thank you, Chairman.
And Mr. Chairman Lucas. Let's just listen to the first couple of remarks.
Members of the committee, like all of you, I am devastated by the enormous impact on many people's lives resulting from the events surrounding the MF Global bankruptcy. Of course, my distress and sadness pale in comparison to the losses and hardships that customers, farmers and ranchers and others, employees and investors have suffered. Their plight weighs on my mind every day. As the chief executive officer of MF Global at the time of its bankruptcy, I truly apologize to all those affected. Before I address what happened, I must make it clear that since my departure from MF Global on November 3rd this year, I have not had access to many of the relevant documents, which are essential to my being able to testify accurately.
Unbelievable.
About the chaotic days preceding the declaration of bankruptcy. The members should also understand that the committee turned down my request to testify voluntarily in January. I had hoped that by that time I would have obtained and reviewed relevant records so that I could be more helpful to the committee. While I intend to be responsive to the best of my ability today, without adequate time and materials to prepare, I may be unable to respond to various questions members might pose. Other questions, given my specific role in the company, will be questions for which I simply have no personal knowledge. Make it very clear, many of your questions may well be ones I myself have. When I joined the company in late March 2010, MF Global was primarily a voice-based broker that provided execution and clearing services for traded in derivative markets and exchanges around the world.
I'd like to comment on what he's already said.
The firm had reported losses in five consecutive quarters before I arrived.
He's already pleading the fifth. Isn't it wonderful? He was going to wait until January. Oh, yeah, as everything got further and further away from the news, then he could slime in. Yeah, Causeline could slime in in January after this thing blows over a little bit. And oh, how sorry he is. Yeah, his heart is bleeding. He's worth, what, $500 million? Yes, how about coming up with the money to cover the losses that the rest of us took?
Gerald Celente is our guest. We just came back live. And so Corzine basically has come in and taken the fifth, as the Washington Post reported that he would take the fifth. And he told the Washington Post that his lawyers did. They don't know where the money is. So how convenient. The money is taken out of the accounts in early November. He leaves, and now he doesn't know anything because he left the company. And he's the one that made the 40-1 bet. This is unbelievable. Gerald Celente is our guest breaking this down. I mean, so this is our worst fears. They're trying to set the precedent, Gerald. And, of course, for those that just joined us, you lost over six figures from your own private account that the large Chicago Mafia Exchange, the CMT, the Chicago trading group, the Chicago Mercantile had come out and said, oh, we're always going to cover everything. It's all insured. Now you're being told it's not insured, it's your money. What type of precedent does this set? Where does this go from here? We haven't talked to you in a week and a half. What have you learned?
I've learned what I learned before, and that's what I'm telling everybody. Your money isn't safe. And for all you jerks out there shooting your mouth off that don't know what you're talking about, they've never had a sellout like this in the history of the commodity exchange in 150 years. And I wasn't speculating. I made a deal to pick up delivery. And all those jerks out there that say I should have known better. Yeah, how about this one? All those jerks in New Jersey that voted in this Don Corzine as senator and governor, you should have known better too. And all you other jerks out there, like the Obama administration that welcomes Corzine into the White House and has him throw $35,000 a plate dinners, yeah, they should have known better too. Yeah, everybody but me should have known. I should have known. Nobody else should have known that Corzine was giving us the shaft. So let's go back and play this over. So these committee hearings begin with a guy asking a question, a congressman, who said he didn't know until today that Gary Gensler, the head of the Commodities Future Trading Commission, was a lieutenant of Don Corzine when Corzine ran the Goldman Sachs gang back in the 90s. He didn't know that, the guy asking questions. Then the question he asks was, well, you had a meeting back with Gary Gensler and John Corzine several months ago. Do you have notes of that meeting? And here's what the woman who they're questioning, and you know why they're questioning this woman and not questioning Gary Gensler? Gary's gone. Gary had to go on an important trip.
Oh.
No, they won't. That's like asking a soldier from the Don what the Don was thinking. So they don't even have Gensler there today. Here's what she said. No substantive issues were discussed. Hey, sweetie pie, what are you talking about? No substantive issues were discussed? What was this meeting about? what the Yankees were going to do in spring training? I mean, come on. You don't get the two people together, the head of the Chicago Futures, the head of the Commodities Future Trading Commission, and one of the top guys of the biggest trading firms in the world, together to talk about nothing.
Let's put this in layman terms, though, Gerald, why this is so big. To explain this, and then this was out a month ago, the head of the CFTC, who is there to regulate this, is the former lieutenant of Don John Corzine, the Obama money bag man, who sets up MF Global, grabs a bunch of other companies, buys them, and then steals private bank accounts, which they admit is totally illegal and was supposedly insured. Now they say they don't know where the money is. They're talking to his lieutenants, and they're saying, oh, what was at this meeting? Oh, I don't know. Nothing substantive. He gets there and says, I know nothing. I left the company a month ago when all this imploded, so I know nothing, when he's the one who was heading it up and takes the fifth. I mean, this is so incredibly ridiculous, and it goes further. The head of the CFTC, who's disappeared, maybe he's in Paraguay, the head of the CFTC, maybe he's the boys with Brazil down there with the old Nazis, I don't know. It now turns out, Reuters reports, that he was invested in MF Global. So this is, Gerald, this is, like you said, 150 years of the mercantile. This has never been done. What's going on here? What's happening? And they got the trolls attacking you, of course. They're attacking us. They're saying it's good, the ATF now admits, that they did ship guns into Mexico to blame the Second Amendment. They're like, the Second Amendment's who's bad because the government shipped guns into Mexico to blame it on it. So that's always blame the messenger. Gerald, this is huge.
Yes, it is. So you know what they were talking about at this meeting? They were talking about whether Don John, the Governor Corzine, could raid segregated accounts like mine. That's what they were talking about. And they don't think they have any notes because, well, it was, according to that woman, you know, just a little idle chit-chat. No, this whole thing is a scam. The whole system is collapsing. It's collapsing in front of us. So what I'm telling people, your money's not safe anywhere unless you got it in your pocket or under your mattress, because they're going to rob it from us. And here's what these clowns that in this commission that are asking these questions, you know what they're saying? Things like, well, you know, we've learned a valuable lesson from this. So how could we put better locks on the barn door so the horse doesn't escape? And they're not even talking about hanging a horse thief. Oh, no, that's off limits.
No, no, here's Corzine, who ran out with the money in front of everybody, saying, I know nothing, and they don't even grill him. It is unbelievable.
It's not unbelievable. It's what's happened. Fascism has come to America. It's the merger of state and corporate powers, and you have no greater power than the money power. During this time of Christmas, let us all remember that the only time Jesus Christ, the Prince of Peace, became angry and violent is when he picked up a whip and drove the money changers out of the temple. And that's a fact.
He's the T-Rex of political talk. Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are back live. Thank you. I was late getting back in the studio, running around out there getting some more articles together. The next 25 minutes or so, we are joined by constitutional law expert Bruce Fine. Then I'm going to go back to your calls and into the Iran situation, threatening to block out the Strait of Hormuz, the admitted Western military attacks inside the country. We told you months ago that's what was happening. Now it's admitted. Was really going on years ago, but now it's accelerated. We'll also get into what's happening with the economy But Bruce Fein joins us. He's a lawyer who specializes in constitutional international law. And, of course, he's written articles for Slate, New York Times, Legal Times, The Washington Times. He's an expert on civil liberties. He's involved with the American Enterprise Institute and the Heritage Foundation, both conservative think tanks, as an analyst and commentator. And, of course, he's also an author. He is Ron Paul's chief legal advisor on the Constitution and Bill of Rights. And AmericanFreedomAgenda.org is one of his sites. And he joins us now to talk about the State of the Union. You know, going back when he was on with us, I don't know, 4 or 5 months ago, we talked about Obama launching military operations and saying he didn't need Congress to do that, that he, quote, did it for the credibility of the UN. I mean, what a slap in the face. What treason that he became the head of the Security Council, violating Article 1, Section 9, flaunting it. The news even admitted that. Now we enter a new phase, and Obama says he'll veto the sections of the National Defense Authorization Act where the military can arrest U.S. citizens. The whole world's a declaration of war against the world, kill anybody anywhere, including NORTHCOM here in the U.S. So all of that's in there. But Obama came out and said, I may not sign it because I'm the president and I have that authority to kill citizens outside of law or courts or anything anywhere in the world. So I don't need Congress. So the media tried to spin it as, oh, Obama's for the Bill of Rights, Constitution. No, the press releases lawyers put out last week, we covered it here, said something entirely different. We'll get Bruce Fein's breakdown on this and get his take on the Ron Paul campaign. Bruce, thanks for coming on with us today.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
Wow, things are really accelerating. Were you shocked by this legislation? And give us your expert take on it and where this takes us.
Yes, and I want to, let's take it from how we interpret the president's threat to veto. This is before the legislation was passed by the Congress. The president claimed, as you indicated, authority unilaterally to assassinate any American anywhere in the world on his say-so alone based upon secret facts, secret laws saying so-and-so is an imminent danger to the security of the United States. You don't have to be on a battlefield. You don't have to be involved in hostilities. You don't even have to be accused of a crime because Mr. Al-Awlaki had never been indicted. He had never been subject to any even formal arrest warrant, anything like that. Neither was his 16-year-old kid who was vaporized a few days later. I mean, this is a power that would have made King George III jealous, and we overthrew King George III. This is a power that every tyrant would crave and celebrate. I can kill any of my citizens anytime I want based upon secret facts and secret law. And on imminent danger, I mean, he'd been on the list, Al-Awlaki, for over a year. And imminent danger? I mean, imminent means it's going to happen immediately. It shows the Orwellian use of language by the Obama administration. That's before. He also claimed the absolute authority to decide on his own whether if he did capture an American citizen or a non-citizen in the United States based upon some suspicion that he said shows involvement in international terrorism, he could decide on his whim. I'll try you in a civilian court and prosecute you, or I'll try you in a military court, military commissions, and prosecute you. I can just flip one way or the other, and you can't constrain me. That was before the legislation. So what he objected to in the legislation wasn't the idea that no president should have this omnipotent authority. He was furious that Congress thought it had any say to try to constrain him in any way, because Congress was trying to limit his ability to flip detainees from the military system to civilian system. So he wasn't defending civil liberty. He was destroying the last vestige of checks and balances and separation of powers by saying, Congress, you have no authority to try to limit me in any way I want whenever I claim I'm fighting a war. I am the law. You know, it's like Louis XIV, the state, c'est moi. It's me. And so the press, instead of understanding that, thinks now he's become an ACLU civil libertarian by vetoing the legislation.
Incredible. That's what's so amazing. He's saying, no, because you're trying to follow the Constitution, even though this is unconstitutional, yeah. The way you're trying to pass it's constitutional.
Right.
I'm not going. And his lawyers said that, yeah. And the media went along with this. Bruce, do you think it's because they are ignorant or because they want to protect him?
Well, I think it's a combination. Several of them truly are just totally ignorant. But others, clearly, they want to. They do not like Congress, and This is a way in which they can try to paint Congress, the do-nothing Congress, whatever. That's in part here, it's not a do-nothing Congress. They do not like the Tea Party conservative slant in the Congress, although this is the opposite of that. And so this is just another chance to slam the Congress of the United States, certainly when they see something that isn't that slights Obama. But a lot of it is just lavishness to the president. And I think also it's unfortunate that it's not limited to Obama. I think the press in general has become cheerleaders for kings and queens, for omnipotence in the executive branch, and assailing any suggestion that self-government really ought to have any sway, because after all, these platonic guardians in the White House and the Oval Office should tell us how to live, you know, whether we should have spinach or broccoli and rules and regulations that Congress never touches that have enormous consequences for the economy. It is a very, very arrogant, condescending attitude of government, the precise attitude that provoked the American Revolution in 1776. I mean, the Founding Fathers, if they saw this piece of legislation, the president asserting that power, they would have impeached the president in less than 24 hours.
Bruce, obviously the system knows that the derivatives, the too big to fails, the crony capitalism is coming down, and we're seeing an acceleration of agendas that you and I and Ron Paul and many others had warned about and been laughed at. Now people aren't laughing. I mean, does it have to get really bad before it gets better? Where do you expect this to go? I mean, do you expect them to be able to implement stuff like this? I mean, this does tell us a lot about the makeup of our government that they're attempting things like this.
Well, it does. And it also is the most dangerous element here is what's become maybe a subtext of our national discourse, a risk-free society. We can, anything that anybody says will make us safer is okay. The rack and screw for results in vandalizing due process, detaining people without accusation or charge, anything you just yell, it makes us possibly safer, even though it doesn't. You know, they get away with it. And that's just the opposite of what the Constitution is about. The default position that the Founding Fathers wanted, that was revolutionary at the time, was that individual liberty is the default. The government can't do anything unless it gives a really strong reason about why they should interfere with your physical and mental liberty and freedom. It doesn't mean an insurmountable hurdle, but that's the default position is liberty. Now, no, just make the government bigger, 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 TSA, more screening, whatever, anything goes that will arguably make us safer. You know, you got to have some risk in life. It takes risk when you get out of bed, you know? Somebody could come up and drive a car when you're on the sidewalk.
Well, Bruce, so as you know, historically, I'd like you to speak to this briefly. Tyrants always say it's for your own good, and historically, the greatest danger outside of natural death, the most unnatural death that we've seen, has been death by government or enslavement or impoverishment by government. I mean, this is the most dangerous thing. As George Washington said, like fire, government is a dangerous servant and a fearful master.
That's exactly right. And that's why, and it's not to say that individuals can't perpetrate evil. They can. But in magnitudes of danger, the government is capable of vastly more wretchedness, destruction of liberty, death than any private individual or group of individuals. And that's why the government is the one where the greatest scrutiny has to be put upon. And it was James Madison, just think about this, this is over 200 years ago, he pointed out and he warned, he said, the instruments of repression that are used initially to fight a foreign danger are invariably used by tyrants to destroy liberty at home. This is the greatest prescience that had ever been uttered by an American statesman. He knew exactly what's going to happen. So first, okay, we're just going to use these special procedures in Afghanistan and then Iraq, then Yemen, then Somalia. And now they're on American soil. And what I fear, Alex, is that if there's anything like another 9/11, or even somebody who stands up and says, all right, Iran's got nuclear weapons, now a president's going to declare martial law. And I'm fearful right now we have an American culture that's so effete in its defense of individual liberty and so willing to accept vassalage to some big brother government who yells safety that the president would get away with it.
Well, Bruce,
on the street,
As you know, that's the entire architecture. I'm going to skip this network break here, so station shouldn't cover this up. It's a network break. I'm going to skip it. We only got you at the bottom of the hour, and this is so important. Constitutional law expert, congressional expert, Ron Paul's main advisor on legal issues, constitutional lawyer, Bruce Fein. He's also an author. Bruce, let's shift gears in the same area, but shifting gears, look at Newt Gingrich. Newt Gingrich has been attacking Ron Paul, calling him a joke. Donald Trump's been calling him a joke. When Donald Trump is a joke by any yardstick, Mr. Eminent Domain, Mr. Democratic Party contributor who claims he's a Republican, clearly a ringer. But Newt Gingrich has now been endorsed by the former Federal Reserve head of Kansas City, Herman Cain. And Newt Gingrich, who is for indefinite detention, torture, all of this, who's for carbon taxes, who's for all these different globalist things, he is now the front runner. Ron Paul's admitted number two now in Iowa and other states. What's your view on Newt Gingrich and what's wrong with mainline Republicans? Or do you think these polls are a fraud? How could any conservative with half a brain like Newt Gingrich?
I don't know. This guy is the epitome of inside the beltway cynicism. You say one thing one day, the other the next day. He exploits all the political chicanery known to mankind. A historian for Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae, $40-50 million that he's that he gets out of for lobbying Congress on his health care issue. He's an egomaniac. He cheats on his wife. He has run. He claims that he's great for frugality, and he has a Tiffany's bank account of $500,000. He manipulates and utilizes nonprofit organizations to benefit his political campaign, his profit-making organizations for free. I mean, and he spouts anything under the sun, no matter how glib yet absurd they are. I mean, his statement, for example, the president should flout decisions of the U.S. Supreme Court if they think they're wrong. You know? Wow, that's really something. This is somebody who is talking about Ron Paul as being a joke. This guy would destroy the greatest conception of all constitutions in the history of the world, judicial review in 1787. And that's a whim of Newt Gingrich. No, the president just said, the heck with the Supreme Court. And you see how absurd that is, because he's at the same time saying, oh, if the Supreme Court declares the health care bill unconstitutional, then it should fall. But at the same time, he's basically saying, well, Obama could just ignore it and implement his health care anyway. I mean, the guy is a total intellectual jumble of contradictions and cynicism. And I believe that the only reason that explains his rise is that he's not Mitt Romney. And Mitt is so statuesque. He's so off-putting as a candidate. They're sort of scrambling, the Republicans are, for somebody else. And Newt is the candidate for that particular time. But I believe as more of these warts in Newt become more known and prominent, he will fall like a shooting star and a comet out of the sky and be destroyed, because his character is so flawed that it simply cannot withstand a sustained public scrutiny.
Amazing analysis, absolutely on target. Looking at Newt Gingrich, it's like shark teeth. All these different politicians come forward, the public learns about them, they fall away. We've seen it with Perry, with Romney, with Newt, with
Bachman,
with all of them. Only Ron Paul has stayed number one, number two, or number three in every straw poll, every scientific poll. He now is, and I'm not just saying this because I'm a Ron Paul supporter, I'm always a realist, he really is the front runner in all the big polls. He beats Obama handily. I mean, he is the man. He should be our next president. He's been dead on about why we're in so much trouble. He's the only candidate that will actually address it. And if we don't elect Ron Paul, if the power structure doesn't elect Ron Paul, I mean, as corrupt as the power structure is, they can't just keep robbing and stealing. They're going to kill the golden goose. Yeah. Your take on that?
Yeah, I think that's right. But the history of empire is the history of self-ruination. But I certainly agree with your assessment of Ron Paul. And this is what I can say with 100% firsthand certainty. He is the only candidate who's not running for self-aggrandizement. He's the only candidate who's not driven by egomania. He's the only candidate that we know when he's in the Oval Office and he makes a decision, it will be made based upon what he thinks are best for the nation and those yet.
For Moncton, the leading expert and champion of exposing this 21st century authoritarianism, that looked invincible just 5 years ago, but is now flailing in its apparent death throes, but still clinging to life and still as dangerous as ever, unfortunately. And with him in Durban, South Africa, where they're having this conference, is Mark Moreno of Climate Depot, the leading group here in the United States. And, of course, he's been an advisor to the Congress as well. Lord Monckton, of course, was one of the chief advisors to Margaret Thatcher. He's a journalist and researcher as well as an inventor. And, again, he joins us from this International Climate Court of Justice. Now they have courts, and we must pay a price to the earth, which means paying money to Al Gore and others. Lord Monckton, thank you for joining us.
It's a real pleasure, Alex. In fact, the authoritarianism of the UN knows no bounds. On entirely arbitrary grounds, they tried to ban me from the conference once I arrived here. So I went away, and we got a plane, and I dropped in by parachute instead. And they weren't used to dealing with that. And it's had massive publicity around the world, and the UN is now looking very silly indeed for having tried to ban me on an entirely trumped-up nonsense, which they've now had to back off from.
Well, that's amazing, and this isn't the first time they've tried this, is it?
No, they're always doing this. The fact is that we are now the Committee for a Constructive Tomorrow, which is the environmental charity that I come here with, which has real projects to help the poor people of Africa and of Latin America. It's not just a pressure group. They are the only organization here which disagrees with what I'm going to call the Marxist party line, what they would call the scientific consensus. Let's call it what it is, the Marxist party line on this whole climate nonsense. And so they always do harass us. I mean, 4 or 5 years ago in Bali, where I had booked a room for press conferences through the UN Secretariat, we were in a press conference one day, very well attended, when along came the chief of the secretariat and said, "You can't have press conferences in this room." And I said, "But we booked these in good faith." And they said, "We don't care. Yours is the wrong message, and we'll have you arrested if you go on giving out the wrong message." That's the kind of thing that the UN does to us every time. And you may remember in Copenhagen last year, I was knocked out by a policeman, not sure whether he was a Danish policeman or a UN policeman, but either way, I was hit from behind while walking away from the policeman in question. There's no doubt they do not like hearing home truths about how their little scientific scam and fraud is collapsing, and how even if they were right on the science, the near unanimous view in the peer-reviewed literature is that, economically speaking, it's better to sit back, enjoy the sunshine, and do nothing. But the real breaking news here at this conference, Alex, is the extraordinary story that in the 138-page document to which the UN's bureaucrats fondly think the various member states, all 194 of them, of the Framework Convention on Climate Change are going to agree, there are now provisions for protecting the rights, not of people, not of animals, not of plants, but of Mother Earth. We're now in straightforward, old-fashioned superstition territory now. The rights of Mother Earth, and they're going to be enforced against the West only by a new international climate court run by the UN with absolute power to order Western countries such as the United States to hand over money and to run their economies and their environments in whatever way the so-called court is.
Sir, I want to go through this as you join us from South Africa, but what, just 2 or 3 months ago, the UN said we want green helmets that will invade your country. So now the UN and NATO will put some rebels in and then claim that they're a democratic group, and NATO bombards and calls it peace, and the peace president gets behind it, Obama. And they're talking about another peace prize because how great these so-called peace wars are. And so I've also seen cases where these UN carbon credits, as you know, in South America, Central America, and Africa, mainstream, even New York Times admits that they come in and kill the locals to take their property to then plant trees on it to save the earth. I mean, isn't this just a new excuse for select globalist corporate colonialism to invade and take over land, but also then shut down real free market companies, as we see power plants being shut down now all over the U.S., and they're now admitting, okay, your prices are going up?
That's right. Let's try and deal with the business of invading people's villages and moving out or killing the villagers. This has happened not that far from here in Uganda. where large areas of land were cleared so that the government of Uganda could claim, quite falsely, that the land was being used as what is called a carbon sink. And all of this is the kind of nonsensical, topsy-turvy, false accounting that leads to these ghastly actions where goons from governments and from the UN go in and shoot people who are on land that they want to take over and turn into a so-called carbon sink. This is becoming rather frightening, Alex. As you know, I often have to calm you down and say, no, 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 it's not as bad as all that. Fact is that this UN conference has gone far, far further than any other in what is essentially a sustained, malevolent attack on the free West. The entire agreement is framed so that there's no question of democratic election of this world government that they're so rapidly establishing. The 1,000 new bureaucracies that were created at Cancun are now all beavering away to undermine the West like termite ants. All of this is going on, and the most extreme document I've ever read is this latest one with its criminal court, with its rights of Mother Earth, with the right of small island states to survive the rising sea level, which, incidentally, Alex, has been rising at a dizzying rate equivalent to 2 inches per century over each of the last 8 years, according to the latest satellite. So that's not going to give them much problem, is it? So all of this fiction and all of this fraud is now being encapsulated in one giant document, which now says they, in effect, want to make the world colder by 2 Celsius degrees, which is 3 Fahrenheit degrees. It's quite a big drop. You're getting kind of on for a third of the way back to the last ice age if you do that. That would kill hundreds of millions, but that's what the lunatics, and that's the only word I can think of to describe them, the lunatics here, are arguing for. They're arguing that carbon dioxide concentration should now be cut back to effectively not much more than 200 parts per million. And that is the point at which plants and trees die because they don't have enough carbon dioxide.
Let me stop you there because
it's quite extraordinary.
I mean, this is incredible. Well, then I want you to really bore down into this because it's important. You're there. You've gotten the document. You're breaking it down. You were instrumental at the Copenhagen event helping get the document where they called for world government and almost doubling the cuts on carbon emissions of the third world that is an admitted, billion dead people over a decade death sentence. This is almost a military attack on infrastructure, on energy that a foreign enemy, that Stalin or Hitler, could never have dreamed of achieving. And when you look at the carbon cycle, sunlight, water, carbon dioxide, and oxygen, they've picked carbon dioxide because folks know sunlight's good, water's good, and oxygen's good. So they literally are teaching kids that carbon dioxide's evil. They have all these video games where they fight carbon dioxide monsters. But I want you to go back to what you just said and go over this document. This is breaking news at your Science and Public Policy website and at InfoWars as well. But and you guys are there in South Africa covering this, where they're openly saying they've said geoengineer things if need be, because I know the world's already in a very low carbon dioxide rate from what it's been in past millennia, and actually cut it. I mean, these people, it's like a science fiction movie, like they're demons from hell or something.
What they are, Alex, is certifiably insane. There's really no other way of describing it. To want to make the planet 2 degrees cooler, which is effectively what their target now means, to want to take the level of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere down to the point where trees and plants will die, to do these things and to say that Western emissions of carbon dioxide must begin to decline immediately, and we must cut by, get this, more than 100% by 2050. So there'll be no coal-fired power stations, no automobiles, no oil-fired power stations, no gas-fired power stations, no industry, no hospitals. We will be straight back to the Stone Age, Alex, if they get away with this nonsense, and without even the right to light a carbon-emitting fire in our caves. And if we misbehave, the International Climate Court will be there to order the troops in to make sure that we shut down our industries. Now, here is the really odd thing about this, Alex. I'm not making this stuff up. You may think this is so extreme that Monckton must have finally flipped his top and gone completely mad or banged his head on landing off his parachute. But no, I haven't. All of this is actually in the document that I got from the UN's Documentation Center, and it was available, provided you knew to ask for it, to any journalist who wanted a copy of it. Not one of them, anywhere in the world, as far as I know, has reported the details that you'll find at scienceandpublicpolicy.org, at climatedepot.org, on your website, infowars.com. We are the few people that are telling the world what is in this document. Now, there's no incentive to me to make this stuff up, because if I did, people would look at the document and say, oh, no, it's just all fiction. He's just making it up. All of this is actually there. It is plainly of interest to the peoples of the West, so that readers of the Times of London, the Times of New York, etc., would surely be intrigued to know this stuff. And yet, and here's the really sinister thing, not a word of any of this is appearing in print. Why do you think that is, Alex? Because I can't work it out.
Well, this is what's happened. You got the secret Copenhagen text and torpedoed it. You helped publicize the emails that got leaked. And we've had several climate gates since then. I think it's fleeing forward. Instead of trying to get the incremental power grab, they see, and they've got national and international polls, as you know, coming out, that it's flipped completely. In some cases, higher than 80% know it's pure bull. People have now discovered... they've now discovered that China makes no cuts, India, Mexico, 100 plus other third world countries. We all make cuts in the West. They know it's a death sentence to our industry, and they know insiders like General Electric that are on the President's Council, the same in your country, are exempt. So they know what it is, a mafia power grab. These people aren't even well-meaning socialists at the end of the day. These are cold-blooded mafia people. So I think you've answered your own question. They're operating by stealth now and going for it all. I mean, is that what you're seeing, or is that what your gut is? I mean, what's the sense of them this time as they lash out and try to ban you from the conference? I mean, are they showing even more fear of you and Mark Moreno than they normally do?
They are absolutely terrified. I went to see Negumi Endo, who is the UN official that sent me an email arbitrarily saying, you've been banned. She didn't even say why I'd been banned. She just said, we hope you will accept that this ban was appropriate, without telling us why it was we'd been banned. It turned out that I'd been banned because, she said, I had been operating a video camera, which I hadn't been operating, and that I had been failing to obey instructions of UN officials when no UN official had given any instruction either to me or in my hearing. Likewise, they said I was harassing people, when in fact, in the end, when I said this is an outrage and I will have to go to court unless you at least withdraw that one, they backed off and said, okay, the allegation of harassment didn't have substance and wasn't pursued. The fact was, the entire thing was simply made up because they knew that if I got into that conference, which of course eventually I did by threatening to go to the court of KwaZulu-Natal, the High Court, and get an order telling the UN to behave because they hadn't complied even with the most elementary principles of natural justice. They backed off pretty quick when I threatened to do that. So I got in, got this document, and wrote it up and got it out. And they were trying very, very hard to stop me because they knew that if anybody was going to expose this scam for exactly what it is, it was probably going to be somebody like me. But yet again, they have failed. And I can tell you this, Alex, it's rather like a funeral parlor in the conference this year. At Copenhagen, there were 30,000 people. At the Cancun conference, probably 20 to 25,000. Now, I think there were about 10,000 there. The UN is claiming 15,000 were registered, but in fact, quite a lot of them didn't even bother to turn up. This whole process is collapsing. As it collapses, what we're seeing with these extremist documents is the UN desperately trying to keep the process going by adding new and absurd commitments, such as to go back halfway towards the last ice age and to reduce carbon dioxide concentrations to the point where trees and plants begin to die. These extreme measures are simply, they're the death throes of this process. That's really what it is.
Well, in closing, sure.
Yeah, they've become so entirely detached from any form of rationality or reality that they no longer understand how malevolent, how unpleasant, how anti-democratic, how anti-Western, and how downright unfair to the people and other creatures of this planet all of these measures that they propose would be. They have lost the plot, and I think the only thing we can do now, Alex, is to say that the UN and the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change must be closed down immediately, and all of the bureaucrats, the thousands and tens of thousands of bureaucrats, hundreds of thousands, indeed probably millions by now, living off the world's taxpayers, must all be kicked out and told to go and get a proper job.
Absolutely. In closing, though, how do you expect them now to regroup and counterstrike? You predicted them with all these new fear-mongering announcements. Now they've had all these other climate gates, countless ones, frauds, confirmation of the previous frauds. I mean, their credibility is shot. But as you've said, tens of billions has been invested by the insider robber barons to try to consolidate power through their communist handmaidens. And so they're not going to go away. How do you expect them to reinvent themselves?
I think what they will do is they will, first of all, as usual, declare a success. They're going to negotiate all through the night. It's the usual tired public relations game plan. They will emerge tomorrow morning with their ties around their ears, stubble on their cheeks, and a wan smile on their faces, saying, "We've done it." But all they will do this time is simply have what they did at Bali, which is another so-called roadmap, which is a way of kicking bureaucratic procedures into the long grass for a few years, from which I think this time it will never emerge again. But they have a backup plan, which is the Rio Earth Summit, which is the 20th anniversary of the 1992 Rio Earth Summit. And this time I think they're going to try and put forward a binding treaty on biodiversity, which sounds all terribly gooey and friendly. And in that treaty on biodiversity, they will craftily bundle all the climate stuff in the hope that nobody will notice. However, UN bureaucrats and little Hitlers and dictators, I will be there in Rio, and don't you dare try to keep me out by lies and cheating the next time round. I will be reading every draft of this proposed treaty, and if there is any of the nonsense in it that there was in the draft which was to be considered by people here at Durban, then I will be exposing it all across the world yet again. After the Rio summit in July, there is then yet another of these annual conferences of the parties to the Framework Convention on Climate Change, scheduled for Qatar in December of next year. And I don't think that very many people will be going to that at all. They'd be lucky to get 5,000 at that. And I think this process is now dying on its feet as the science collapses. The economics has never been there. The vast majority of economic opinion says it's much better to do nothing than to try to prevent global warming by taxing, trading, regulating, reducing, or replacing CO2. And so I think that the scare is now pretty much over. And the next thing that I will be arranging is to make sure that certain bogus scientists and bogus UN officials who have clearly committed specific frauds, scientific and economic frauds, as part of this so-called process, will be reported to the police in their respective countries. We've got a whole project now to do this, and we will be sending these people for trial, and we hope that the judges, on hearing just what they've been up to, will send those who are guilty of fraud to jail.
People see it as, you know, extreme or aggressive to call for the jailing of these people, but your estimates are well-researched, and I've seen other mainline estimates. If you cut the carbon by the levels they talked about in Copenhagen, and as I've read over this new document, it's even more draconian in their flight forward, we're talking conservatively, as you've documented, a billion deaths. This is bigger than Hitler, Stalin, Mao, and all other 20th century mass murder combined by an order of three or four times conservatively. And we have to understand, you know, earlier when you mentioned what's going on in Africa and Latin America, it's in major news that governments and companies to get these carbon sinks and money are forcing people off their land, killing people, shooting them. And the news has come like, well, it's for the earth. I guess it's okay. I mean, we've seen the greenies come out, the London Guardian, everywhere, and endorse green fascism. They say, yes, you bet we're going to arrest you for not doing what we say. We're seizing control. We're going to burn down ski resorts. You know, we're going to arrest Moncton. I mean, they are aggressive authoritarians, and they're not dressed like the Nazis. They're not dressed like the Soviets. Every generation expects it to be looking the same. This is our generation's Hitlers. They've got to go to prison for the mass murder and eugenics, because you know, sir, at the end of the day, they're eugenicists. They just want to cut, as State Department Memorandum 200 says, the energy supplies of the third world that is a death sentence. I'm sorry to be ranting.
No, well, I mean, I can quite understand, because here I am in South Africa, where the internet works occasionally, as we've just found out. And 80% of South Africa is lucky enough to have electricity. 20% still doesn't. But South Africa's electricity accounts for 60% of all the electricity consumed in Africa, which means that most countries in Africa have practically no electricity at all, except, of course, in the fancy air-conditioned government offices. So we are seeing a conspiracy, if you like, by the world's governing class, the world's increasingly communistic or fascistic classe politique, against the ordinary peoples of the world. And of course, it's the poor who get hurt first. As you were saying, the farmers of Uganda who are being kicked off their land and shot if they disagree by UN troops and Ugandan troops going in to create these entirely fictitious carbon sinks, which are complete nonsense. And this is, of course, a worrying trend. Now, it's very difficult to nail them down for genocide for what they're doing at the moment. What we can do, however, is go after those scientists and bureaucrats who have been peddling deliberate scientific frauds. And there are one or two, you can only do sort of one or two clear cases. You start with those. And you put those cases to the police with a lawyer, and you say, here is the matter of the fraud, here is how they hope to make money from it, here is how much money they've made from it, and here is why it is definitely a scientific fraud, and here is independent scientific evidence that it is a fraud. And then you get the prosecuting authorities to do their job on a relatively small number of really bad scientists who have got away with this so far because they think that the governing class of the world will protect them. But no, it won't. Once we pin down the few clearest frauds and report the various people in various countries that have perpetrated these frauds,
it'll fall like dominoes.
Once their collars start to be felt, just a couple of senior ones, they will immediately back off. And this entire process will collapse. And having seen the horror, and I mean the horror, and the genocidal destruction which this agreement that they're being asked to sign here would entail, then it is absolutely now necessary, for the sake of the life of humanity, that this process be stopped at once. And that's why we're thinking we now have to say, no more, Mr. Nice Guy. If you are a scientist that has committed a fraud for the sake of getting more funding for yourself or your university, or for the sake of going along with this scam because it gives you status and position which you wouldn't otherwise have, we are watching, we are gathering the evidence, and we will see you prosecuted. And if you are guilty of fraud, then we will see you go to jail. And in the UK, the minimum sentence for the kind of fraud that's being perpetrated here is at least 10 years imprisonment without the chance of parole.
Absolutely. And look, they're guaranteed to end up going to prison someday, because if they keep carrying out their plans, the crimes will be so great, history shows they'll be resisted, and then it won't be prison. They're going to be facing something even more than that. I mean, these people are true eugenicist green Nazis, anti-human scum. And Lord Moncton, we really appreciate your tireless effort crisscrossing the world, in your great calling to stand up against these people. Thank you for talking to us, and we look forward to talking to you in the future. Thank you for breaking this electronic Berlin Wall media blackout that's happening in the West, and we look forward to talking.
That's a wonderful description, Alex. Electronic Berlin Wall. That is exactly what it is. These Marxist journalists who have captured one by one the newspapers and electronic media of the West are now deliberately ganging together to throttle the West that nurtured them and destroy the lives of our people and the hopes of our industries and the future of our nations. And we must, as you rightly say, fight and fight and fight again to save the rationality and reason and cheerful chaos of the free market and the prosperity of the West and the democracy, which we have until now been fortunate to be able to take for granted. So God bless you, Alex. I'm going to hand you over now to Mark Morano.
Thank you so much, Lord Monckton. Wow, it is good to know that those guys are over there fighting, because we wouldn't even have this information if they didn't go to every one of these conferences and be basically poked and prodded and abused by the miscreant security forces of these people. Again, they're there in the same conference room. Mark Morano is now coming over via the wonders of the Internet and joining us via Skype from Durban, South Africa, give us a breakdown from his perspective on exactly what's happening there. But again, this is a news blackout on this, the most draconian. You can read it at Infowars.com, ClimateDepot.com, ScienceOfPublicPolicy.org. The document that reads like something out of a science fiction movie if you want to seize total control. And now for a quick interview with Mark Morano as well. I know it's late at night over there, Mark. Thank you for joining us, and thank you for breaking this blackout, this electronic Berlin Wall.
Thank you. So
you're back in the nest of authoritarian control freaks. What's it like?
Well, as Maxwell Smart used to say, we're living in danger every minute. We're being blacked out, threatened by security, threatened to be thrown out, threatened violence, but we're loving every minute of it. This has been a situation where we go around in the media room, Lord Monckton and I, and almost to the mainstream media of the West is not interested. They look at us as though we're some kind of aliens. Our simple pitch is we're global warming skeptics that are at this conference, and we're here to condemn it. Would you like some balance in your reporting? All the mainstream media is not interested, but the developing world's media is interested. And I'm talking about Chinese media, South African media, Indian media, and some other African media we did. It's amazing how the developing world is so receptive to this message. In fact, we're on the front page of the South African newspaper.
Wow.
The only climate skeptics at this conference. So they get it. But the other media, we had a press conference on Wednesday where I released the Climate Depot A to Z report. And I literally, from every letter of the alphabet, their claims not only are failing to materialize, the evidence is going the opposite direction. We were heckled by UK Guardian reporters. We were heckled by UN delegates. We were heckled by Greenpeace, who planted them in there. The UN made us start the press conference late, and they stopped us, you know, cutting our time short. They did not want us there, but we persevered. We made our presentation, the 61-page report, to the United Nations, and I told reporters there that this is now the level of medieval witchcraft. Everywhere you look at the UN, it says more floods, more drought, more tornadoes, more hurricanes, and they all say we must act to stop this. They actually believe, like the Aztecs, that we can slaughter people and have acts of legislation to change the weather. The UN has reduced itself to medieval witchcraft at this point, where they're claiming they can control the weather. This is the most bizarre conference of all of them that I've attended. They've really morphed into we can control the weather. Now, it's not even really that much about global temperatures.
They teach school children there shouldn't even be seasons now, and they cry whenever they see housing developments. I have family this has happened to. They say they're murdering the bunny rabbits. I mean, it's incredible brainwashing. Now, I was talking to Lord Monckton, obviously, a few minutes ago, who's there with you, and he was describing this as violent death throes. Do you concur with that analysis? And what's the overall spirit of these people?
Yeah, I mean, I've been to pretty much every conference since the Earth Summit in 2002, and then they've always picked exotic locations. They've been Bali, Indonesia, and South America. And this is by far the conference with the least amount of energy, the least amount of interest, and a total of boredom has set in, because everyone knew going into this that there was going to be no world leaders there. President Obama didn't come. There were no Hollywood celebrities. Angelina Jolie, Leonardo DiCaprio, Harrison Ford, even Al Gore were all supposed to be here, and none of them showed up. And this is just, it's in the death throes. And I think what's happening now is a retooling of this entire environmental thrust. And the Rio conference, which I believe will be the end of May into June of 2012, is going to be a shift where climate is now going to be rolled into the larger issue of sustainable development, species, deforestation. And in a way, this serves the UN purposes much better, because instead of just focusing on the atmosphere and industry, now they can control the oceans, now they can control roadways, land use, agriculture, you name it. Under that rubric of sustainable development, they can cover it all. And we cannot ever forget that it was Republican presidents who got us into this. The first George H.W. Bush in 1992 went to the first Earth Summit and committed the United States to these United Nations treaties, which then led to Kyoto, which then led the second George Bush, sent Colin Powell to the Earth Summit in Johannesburg, South Africa, which I was at. The Bush family has done more to commit the United States to environmental and United Nations lunacy than all the Democrats combined. And we have to look at our two top nominees and we have to get terrified. Mitt Romney and Newt Gingrich are incapable of standing up to the United Nations, of standing up to the international green movement. Mitt Romney, who had John Holdren as an advisor, is clueless. Newt Gingrich, who has a new book coming out next year, has a climatologist named Catherine Hayhoe, who is a committed and embarrassing global warming alarmist. Don't be fooled for a moment by Newt Gingrich's recent sounding of skepticism. Neither of these candidates are equipped to handle this, and it will be nothing more than a continuation of the disastrous policies of Bush 1 and Bush 2 if either of these Republicans get in.
Well, it's good to see you fired up, and I've never seen you quite like this. Certainly, you can smell blood with these fraudsters. Of course, it was at the Rio de Janeiro conference, as you know, it was at 92, where Maurice Strong publicly said, we're going to have a post-industrial world. We are going to shut down the United States. We are basically going to carry all of this out. And that is exactly what they were basically able to do. So looking at this, I wanted to bring up a couple of positive points that I've seen here in the U.S., and that is the EPA on its own came out and said, we're going to shut down most of the coal power plants. Of course, those that aren't owned by insiders like General Electric. Obama's had to back off on declaring carbon dioxide, at least from those, as deadly nerve gas poison that plants breathe. But still, he's moving ahead with some of the shutdowns. And, of course, you know, the EPA was going to declare hay dust and any type of dirt or dust on your farm as $10,000 fines, first offense. Just a total way to shut down small farmers and ranchers. The House passed by a giant margin today. The Hill newspaper is reporting that they're not going to do that. I mean, this is clearly just a way for this government mafia to make breathing evil, dust on a farm evil. I mean, it is so incredible. But more and more, this is a selective economic warfare attack by people that have said they want a post-industrial world and who've always hated the free market and capitalism.
Yeah, this is death by bureaucratic bean counters. They've gone after our ice makers on our refrigerators. They've gone after our dishwashers. Our dishwashing liquid now has to be green and therefore not cleaning. They've gone after the washing machines. They've sapped the water and the power. They've gone after our toilets, our shower heads. The Japanese government's telling the citizens that to go to bed early to prevent global warming. The UN chief has said people can't order ice water in restaurants because of the carbon footprint. And the level of control that George Orwell didn't contemplate. He who controls carbon controls life. And I will add to that with the Rio Earth Summit coming up. He who controls carbon and controls land use policy and even the oceans controls the world. And that's what they're going for. And this isn't conspiracy talk. This is in their documents. We're looking at this document. One of the most hilarious things about this 138-page document that Lord Monckton wrote about was they want to stop wars, not because wars are bad for people, not because wars are bloody, but they want to stop it because of war's impact on the atmosphere. In other words, the greatest reason not to fight a war is concern over climate change and global warming. This is the level of absurdity we've reached.
All right, we're getting a bit of a Skype breakup there from Durban, South Africa, but that's okay. It's great to even have your audio. It's kind of like an old Star Trek episode where we're talking to you from 20 light years away, and it's breaking up a bit. Going from memory, they're going to pull it up, and we might even cut the video in. A few months ago, we went to one of the smart growth conferences here in town, and they had, I think, the head of the Nature Conservancy was there, and Mark Tursik, head of the Nature Conservancy. And they went up to him and said, we'd like to speak to you about coal, because they were there saying shut down coal. And when they brought up, hey, well, Obama said, you know, in that video clip that he wanted to bankrupt coal, what's your view on that? And he said, whoa, I'm not talking to you, interview over, and ran off like he was a vampire confronted with a giant silver cross. I mean, used to these people would get on the offensive if you got on the offensive. Now, they just turn tail and run, and more they don't have that crazed, power-seizing look in their eyes. They're trying to regroup, as you said, and move on.
Major environmental and climate organizations are shutting their doors. They're firing staffers. Climate stock exchanges are collapsing. This was truly subprime science, subprime economics, subprime politics. But we can never count them out because there's never any previous environmental scare that had this kind of funding, backing of the UN or backing of the media. It's unprecedented. So it doesn't just die. And the head of the UN, Rajendra Pachauri, of the climate panel, is on record as saying global warming is but a symptom of a larger problem. And that larger problem is sustainable development and species extinction. They're already on record as doing the great shift. So I think what's going to happen is they're going to regroup. Climate's not going to go away, but it's going to be part of a larger picture where they're going to go after every conceivable way that human beings interact. And as a former founder, a co-founder of Greenpeace, Patrick Morris said, the modern environmental movement today is the most anti-human agenda that we have. We have at the UN conference, they had torches, solar torches they were trying to peddle for sub-Saharan Africa. People living in huts made of dung aren't offered coal-fired power plants, which Obama and other environmentalists prevent, but they're offered solar torches to read by at night. This is the perverse way. And they're actually people like Governor Brown in California who believe the developing world can't develop. The environmentalists tell them they can't have what we have. Darn, they missed it, but we've already raped the earth and they can't rape it either. They can't make it.
Well, look, you've been studying this as long as I have, but I've read all their literature. We've got hundreds of their books that I've read, Aaron Dykes has read here in our office in the last decade. I've made films on it. The lower level people mean well or useful idiots like supporters of Lenin and Stalin or Hitler. But at the higher levels, they say, look, well, there are too many people. We're going to get rid of these brown scum. You know, Margaret Sanger said, we got to hire blacks as our front so we can kill these weeds. Well, we'll say we're liberal. You know, we, the American Nazis, in their words, have to pose as liberal to get away with this and not let them know that. And that's what it is. It's a death sentence. At the higher levels, yes, it's about, and they say it, blocking the third world from developing, which, by the way, actually makes people have less children, but they don't care. It's just about cold-bloodedly blocking their development. And so at the top, from my research, these are knowingly extremely virulent, racist people. You know, look at Obama, you know, increasing the funding for abortions in Africa. These are very, very sick people. From your research, have you found parallels to that, or do you disagree?
No, absolutely. In fact, Obama's science advisor, John Holdren, has actually said, first of all, cheap energy is one of the hazards of a free society. And secondly, and most shockingly, he's on record. We dug up old newspaper clippings from the early 1970s that aren't available on LexisNexis or Google. And that John Holdren was vociferously opposing the agricultural revolution of Norman Borlaug that brought agricultural and ended famine throughout Asia in the late 1960s, 1970s. John Holdren opposed it because he didn't want the earth to be able to sustain that many extra people. Here was a classic example. When confronted in life, you have a choice. John Holdren chose death. John Holdren chose anti-technology. Norman Borlaug went on to win the Nobel Prize. It was one of the most celebrated scientists of our age, a man who probably saved hundreds of millions of people from starvation. And he just died a few years ago. He was also a global warming skeptic. But Norman Borlaug was a hero. John Holdren was a eugenicist who now is feted by the mainstream media and Obama. So it's exactly what is going on. And these people are in high office right now.
Unbelievable. But we are seeing the mainstream media's decline right along with government's approval rating, right along with the climate panic pushers. I mean, certainly their fleeing forward, I think, is only going to destroy them in the end.